This is TWIT, This Week in Tech, episode 12 for Sunday, July 3rd, 2005. Welcome to This Week in Tech. We're back again for another fine blended recording. Leo Laporte is off in Europe on a cruise with Mac aficionados and digital photography enthusiasts. I'm Patrick Norton, joining me here in the interweb land of voice conferencing, voice over IP, whatever you want to call it, is Kevin Rose and Robert Herron. Gentlemen.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Leo's knee-deep in Trekkies, too, right now. Let's not forget.
That's what I heard. Like he's basically trapped on a cruise ship with a bunch
trapped.
Of... Well, have you ever been on a cruise ship?
Yeah, I have. I actually enjoy them. I love cruises.
I've been on one, and it was me and a bunch of people who were just really way too happy to be locked into a boat. Obviously, I was on the wrong boat.
Is that during your drinking days or no?
No. I think I probably would have enjoyed it much, much more if I had been drinking.
I was going to say, that's part of the fun.
Yeah. See, the problem is like, I think sober, it's a bit much to take wandering around a boat from one end to the other going, there's the other end of the boat.
Buffet-style dining.
No, we didn't have buffet. We had the fully seated dining. The food was pretty good, but it definitely had that, like, you know, chicken for 800 kind of feel to it. A lot of bouncy stuff.
Yeah.
But, so Leo's in Europe. Big announcement we've been talking about, which we can finally talk about, is that AOL is going to be carrying our feed, and AOL has, quote, more bandwidth than most countries available for its podcast downloads. So the podcast should get a lot easier to download this week. So if
nice.
It was much faster, you now know why. The other thing that happened this week is iTunes started its podcast coverage, or to say Apple's finally integrated iTunes 4.9 with podcasting. What was that?
Dude, I'm sorry. That's my neighborhood right now. It is the 4th of July weekend, and every 15 seconds, somebody has a brick of firecrackers going off.
Oh, man.
It's pretty impressive right now in my neighborhood.
Oh, man. iTunes is now supporting podcasts. We've been floating around number 7 last I checked, which is pretty exciting.
I've had some problems though. I've been messing around with some of the RSS that they've put into the. They actually introduced some new tags for RSS kind of define your description, the author, all the relevant information, so that you can be listed correctly within the iTunes directory. Have you messed around with that at all, Pat? Have you seen how we don't have our own little? We don't have an official like logo or anything.
Yeah, because I thought we had to actually talk to them to change it, but it looks like we're gonna have to actually change the way our RSS feeds are run.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain because we're gonna have to rewrite some custom code or something to write out those feeds correctly. Well, actually, you know, we go all through FeedBurner though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so FeedBurner, I know that they're working on it, so hopefully in the next week or so we should see iTunes-compatible feeds coming directly from FeedBurner, so that'll help out quite a bit.
That'll be cool.
They said a million subscriptions now since they launched the 4.9 to two different various podcasts out there.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive.
Are they still listed about 3,000 podcasts?
I don't know. I'd have to look again. But there's quite a few.
Have you used the service yet on iTunes to search for podcasts, and how easy is it?
Just started to play around with it. It's
Podcast Alley right now has a little over 4,000 listed.
Yeah, that sounds about right, 4,000 to 5,000. I'm up in Leo's office by myself, so I've already sorted like through all the drawers looking for valuables and contemplating taking
the printer
home with me. either that or the Matisse print. It's a tough call. Yeah, it's very quiet up here in Petaluma right now.
The compound, baby.
We've got like three big stories this week. We've got AMD suing Intel. We've got the MGM versus Grokster decision in the Supreme Court. And the RIAA is suing another 784 swappers. What do we want to hit first? Wow, we're all just so tired and sad about it by now.
Let's see.
I'm curious what Robert's take is on the AMD versus Intel, because, you know, I read some of the different articles around there, and I really don't see, I don't know, I've really seen AMD has been gaining market share all along. So what are they really complaining about? I don't understand what exactly is happening here.
Darn good question, really. I mean, does anybody even know what this suit is about exactly?
There it is. AMD sees upside in court battle against Intel. Advanced Micro Devices Incorporated has filed a broad antitrust lawsuit against Intel Corporation claiming Intel illegally maintains monopoly in the PC processor market. AMD, which announced the suit on Tuesday, offered a long list of examples in which it says Intel has used its position, including its ability to offer product rebates or dole out funds to influence PC makers to limit the purchases of AMD chips. The suit filed Monday afternoon in Delaware claims that Intel has violated the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton Act, and the California Business Professional Code by influencing the product plans of computer makers and therefore limiting consumers' ability to choose between different types of products, AMD said in a statement. And I should point out that I just read that from ExtremeTech.com. It's a pretty e-week story up there. And I point that out so that they don't sue me for reading their copy off of their website. Basically, I mean, it's kind of funny. The pundits have been pretty funny about this, is pointing out that, like, Microsoft gets slammed all the time for fairly predatory practices within the marketplace, and talking about how nobody really goes after Intel, and now AMD actually is.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's just, for me, it just seems like, well, it's AMD whining a bit, and odds are, you know, is it Intel's fault that they can dump chips so cheaply to manufacturers and create incentives? And I'd be curious to see what incentives they've teamed up with Microsoft to co-bundle for these OEMs. And if anything exists there, if that's the case, you know, AMD may have a strong suit in the courts. But otherwise, this is probably nothing more than them trying to raise awareness of the fact that, look, there are long-standing deals in place, and with the pricing structure the way it is, the way that Intel can dump a chip, or an AMD is maybe less able to match that price or take such a cut, it's really hard to say one way or another.
Right. Well, I don't know. It's interesting because, like, if you start looking at the Sherman Act, the basic idea is to prevent supreme concentrations of economic power, so that, like, one corporation, like Standard Oil, is like the classic case of trust busting. The idea that they just had far too much influence over what was going on. I don't know. Kevin's all silent over there in the corner.
No, I just I'll wait to see what happens when this case actually opens up, because it is interesting because I've heard several times that Dell was considering to actually introduce AMD chips, in their desktop lines and their server lines. And as we all know, AMD makes some of the best processors out there. And the reason why they haven't done that, I don't know. Maybe there was some, behind the scenes stuff going on that we don't know about, like certain price breaks that they wouldn't get if they introduced, AMD class chips into their line of machines. So,
see, that's my gut feeling about the whole situation, is that, look, AMD saw what prices Intel was able to provide for some of the top tier vendors.
Right.
They couldn't match it, and they found it cheaper to simply put this case in the courts, to raise awareness, just bring it out into the public light a little bit.
I don't know how much I buy into that.
Who knows? That's my speculation totally.
There's definitely, if you talk to some people, there's always been, you hear people talking about their relationship with the Intel rep. Like, I remember talking to insert name of giant PC manufacturer here, where they talked about introducing AMD chips, and they got such a sweetheart deal from Intel that they agreed to withdraw a product that they literally were like 72 hours from shipping. And I've seen that happen at one of the, three largest U.S., or at the time it was, the second or third largest U.S. manufacturers of PCs. Intel certainly wields a lot of power, and they also, if they decide to not offer you of the standard rate or decide to up the prices they're charging you, they can pretty much destroy a company's ability to be profitable, or at least harm it quite a bit.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Per chip cost, too, has a lot to do. I mean, a lot of the cheap systems that you'll find out in the marketplace right now are based on, like, a Celeron design, something that's very inexpensive for Intel to punch out. And for most people, I think a lot of it, in this whole, Intel versus AMD thing, for a lot of consumers, they simply don't need the latest and the greatest processor to do what they do on a daily basis. And they can get away with an extreme value part in that sector in particular, where you have these cutthroat pricing schemes for just powerful enough CPUs. I think that maybe that's where AMD is trying to, you know, move into more and finding it very, very difficult to compete with Intel's just grasp on established vendors. That, and it requires vendors to make a switch too. And, you know, some of your top tier vendors, I mean, like, I'm thinking of PC gaming boxes that you can buy from high end vendors. They always give you a choice, you know, which chip do you want. But when it comes down to those ultra value machines nowadays, it's typically an Intel based system. Interestingly, when you ask for processors from Intel for evaluation, it would take a. It's almost impossible to get their low end parts. They only want to send you the very best.
Yeah.
Which is something they tend to help. That's how they kind of focus on the review community a little bit and try to direct them in a certain way.
Man, Supreme Court decisions came out this week. Grokster, or MGM versus Grokster. Grokster gets smacked down.
Well, didn't that center on the fact that they advertised that they were going to become like the best pirate program ever? Or it specifically had the wording in their advertising?
The court ruled that
they could get anything for free or something like that.
Yeah, the court basically the Supreme Court said there are a lot of legal and legit, basically it's like the Betamax decision, a lot of legal and legitimate uses for services like Grokster, but that the companies could be held criminally responsible if they push the idea that you can snag copyrighted material without paying for it. So what didn't happen is they didn't define what the is Grokster inducing copyright infringement. The court didn't define or set any kind of legal standard for what inducement is, and sent Grokster back to a lower court to decide whether or not Grokster was trying to pushing people to violate copyright law.
That's pretty interesting. Did you see how Bram Cohen from BitTorrent came under some fire as well? Because I guess they just recently, just last week, uncovered an old agenda on his website that said, and I quote, he creates programs to, the quote actually starts here, commit digital piracy.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is he said about that, he's like, I was young, it was a joke. I thought the manifestos people were writing were pretty funny, so he wrote his own. And,
I don't know, man. That's got to be scary for him that he might, there might be some legal pressure pushed upon him because of this. You know, he's been claiming all along that BitTorrent was created, for legitimate reasons, and now to see something like this uncovered, I don't know. It's not good.
It's interesting. It's like that's the only place anybody's ever seen anything from him that makes him, sound, I don't know, nefarious. I mean, the RIA and MPAA would probably like to see him beaten with a stick, but...
Hey, but you can go ahead and code away, write these incredible programs that help us share files, as long as you never, ever utter the words, I'm supporting piracy, or in any way do I, condone this activity. As long as you do that, I don't know. It's such a fine line, yes.
It's a thin, but it's an important line. And the idea of if you're telling people, like, hey, sign up for our service, and not only will we make money, you'll be able to get a lot of stuff without spending money. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty sleazy. You look at that, it's like a thin legal line where it's okay to make something. I mean, you can kill somebody with a hammer, right? But we don't make hammers illegal.
I found that the oddest part of this whole thing. It's like, as long as you say the right thing, you can pretty much do the same thing another person can do, but if you cross the line and say, oh yeah, by the way, this type of technology can be used to pirate movies and whatnot, we're not encouraging it.
It makes him seem less squeaky clean than he was,
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people get, really upset at the ACLU. They're defending people who are saying nasty things. But it's like, hey, First Amendment rights. The thing about the First Amendment, freedom of speech, means that people who you don't agree with get to speak, and people who create content that you don't want to watch get to create their content. You know what I mean? It's tricky.
Well, the good thing that's coming out of all of this is that, at least in the last couple of years, it's very noticeable how all of the content owners are finding alternative ways now of getting us what we want. Yeah. And I'm even hearing whispers now. We talk about the granddaddy of video being 1080p, and I'm actually hearing of content producers thinking of broadcasting that format, be it over the air or through satellite. And, hopefully they'll finally get the message. I mean, we have actual... You can go online and buy music now. You can download it cheaply.
And the amount of music that's being legally downloaded is growing rather quickly.
And video is going to follow the same path, and the more it becomes convenient, I think, or where it really becomes a convenience thing for us is when we have enough bandwidth where it isn't such a big deal to move that kind of data from one place to another.
Right.
Well, we've heard, you know, talks of people like Netflix offering, you know, compatible devices where you'll plug an Ethernet cable in the back or wireless and instantly be able to, rather than rent your movies, just have them downloaded directly to your TV, which would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, CinemaNow's been out for a long time, which allows you to essentially download. I mean, you know, you look at the front page, they've got The Incredibles, Hotel Rwanda, Ocean's 12, Sideways, Closer. I mean, it's a little funky. You start downloading and then you wait while more downloads before you start, but...
See, there have been some attempts at that, too, with a set-top box that uses an over-the-air antenna that pulls in digital content right into the box itself using, you know, broadcast towers like you'd receive HDTV over the air.
Was that using the blanking interval for carrying that?
You know what? No, it was just downloading a transport stream. I mean, it's like up to 20 megabit, and it would just simply record that information on your hard drive, and it had their own DRM built in. But that was it would just constantly fill the thing throughout the day. And
that's
then at the end of the day,
before,
you could just go through it and, you know, pick and choose what you wanted to see in here.
Hmm.
And you know what? If they can do that over the air, why can't they give it to us in the best quality possible then?
Good question. They may not want to, you know, they may be afraid of letting it loose on the air. I mean, it's interesting to look at, like, CinemaNow is, unless they've changed it, they're still using Microsoft Video.
Right. Same with MovieLink.
Yeah.
But those offer good forms of protection, I believe. I mean, there are plenty of protected Windows media files out there where you can, you know, only view it on this site, or you can view it one time with the proper license.
Right.
Like, especially, what is it, with the Terminator 2 disc. When you actually go to watch that, it's awful the way it's hacked in there, but it actually goes online and pulls a one-week license for you. And then during that week, you don't have to have the computer connected again, but... In that time, you can watch it in the highest quality, up to whatever resolution you want. You know, 1080p, I think, is the maximum.
So if broadband...
That's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I always wondered, I always thought, like, the part of the reason that the studios were behind, were so supportive of MovieLink and CinemaNow is because they want to, you know, forget about HD, you know, DVD, forget about Blu-ray. The idea of having, you know, a software codec and a online transport system for movies, it just, they can keep changing the encryption and constantly just updating that to make it harder and harder to actually crack and liberate the content.
Totally. It was really just a matter of how you're going to move that information, depending on the quality. If the quality's low enough and the compression's good enough, you can do it over current broadband that people have right now. But for really good quality, most of us really need about five times what we currently have in the terms of broadband speeds.
Well, we also need servers that can feed content that fast.
True.
Nothing worse than having a big giant pipe and nothing to fill it with. That sounded really rude, and I'd like to apologize for everyone with dirty imaginations out there.
Just you, man.
Just me. I just feel naughty all of a sudden.
It's the long weekend, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. What are you guys doing for July 4th?
I'm going to Vegas.
Going to Vegas?
Visit the family.
Nice.
Yeah, get away. Probably take off either later tonight or tomorrow morning sometime and just hang out, shoot off some fireworks, you know, have fun.
Nice.
If you leave for Vegas from L.A. anytime between 10 and 6, you're going to be driving for 9 hours.
I know. That's the problem. Got to wait till late night.
Yep. That's the best time to do it. But I'm taking it easy. I'm trying to get back on Battlefield 2, if that's what I want to go play.
It's
the game I love to hate.
Yet? Have you stopped playing that at all yet?
Only when it crashes me to the desktop or I cannot find a server that me and a couple of buddies can't join together. Or the crappy in-game browser just locks up. Or, let's see what else. There's so much. That game is so... It needs a patch so badly, it's not even funny at this point. But I'm still playing it. It is highly addictive, and I think it's one of the... It's a fun team game right now.
Oh, man.
Lots of variety, lots of strategy.
Oh, man.
Pretty damn cool.
That's funny. I actually just upgraded my system. I put a new power supply in it to replace the one that I fried a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And I got the Antec. And
dude, I'm all about Antec right now. I swear.
I can't believe it's the True Power 2. I can't believe how quiet it is. Because my old...
I have a 550 I picked up. You bought two of those because... I ran into all these problems with that last box I built where I literally replaced every component and finally got to the power supply, and these two brand new power supplies I had were just not doing it. So I went out and got the True Power 2. I think it was a 550 watt, and the system just fired right up. as soon as I plugged that in. I was just like, thank you. That's it. I'm done. I'm really buying this brand. That or Power PC and Cooling, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm a PC Power and Cooling guy. I love their PC power supplies. Yeah. But they're so expensive. They're just so pricey.
Well, I'm serious. I'll never spend less than $100 on a power supply again. That's just like a kind of like line in the sand at this point.
Yeah, see, I got like a 470 watt power supply for $70.
That's okay too.
Well, it's funny.
That range.
For what I'm running, I mean, I've got one hard drive, I've got one DVD burner. Although I did just add an ATI 9800 XT, which is so much faster than my long suffering GeForce 5200.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Although I got to admit, the 5200 was playing Battlefield 2, 800 by 600. It was a little twitchy at 10 by 7, but I was kind of happy that it was actually playing it.
Pat, you gotta let me know, man. I have better video cards than that just laying around the house, dude. I'll look you up.
I just like the idea that I got for free what, you know, Dan Hewitt is going to be paying off on his credit card till like the year 2030.
he's still paying on that one video card.
He still hasn't paid it off?
No, he hasn't paid it off yet.
Oh my god. Is he going to buy the 7800, the new Nvidia card?
I think he's going to hold off for a while. I think he learned his lesson on that one.
So harsh. Yeah, it's been amazing because I just rebuilt somebody else's system, and they threw a third hard drive into the system. It basically had a choice between, I looked at them like, okay, you can either not boot your DVD-ROM or not boot your your Audigy 2 control panel on the front or one of the hard drives, because there just wasn't enough juice in the power supply to keep everything running.
So that's bad. Frightening.
Well, it was.
That's
it was
a
like
bad a, scene.
It was like a 330 watt power supply. So, I don't know.
I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe I had two bad brand new power supplies in a row. Or not bad, but just they just weren't enough for what I was doing, and it seemed incompatible with the motherboard combination I was using, the CPU combination. I don't know.
Have you seen the new the ATX connectors? The new big ATX connectors with the
24 pin.
On? Yeah, the 24
right.
pin. I actually had to basically shave off the.
The extra four?
No, I didn't have to cut those off. The IDE connectors on my the IDE ports on my motherboard were so close to the ATX connector. I shaved off the cracked off the plastic off the port on the motherboard and shaved the plastic off of the cable, and that was the only way I could actually get both my hard drive and my new power supply to connect in at the same time.
Oh man!
Oh, that's crazy.
Well, I don't think anybody expected when the board I got, I don't think anybody ever expected the extra pins to show up on the power supply. So it's like,
but at least on the plug itself, those are removable too. So if you do have the old 20 pin,
I'll go back and take a look at it. I'm pretty sure they don't detach. If they detach, I'm going to be really bummed out that I was like,
because I almost did that. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm like, wait a second. Then I just like, oh, it unclips. Cool. The four new pins.
Now that the power supply fan in my system doesn't sound like a jet taking off, I can now hear the hard drive cycling, and I can't believe how loud the fan is on my processor.
I think the loudest sound in my current gaming box, which is soon to be my old gaming box, is the Northbridge fan. It's an Intel board. It's a tiny little 7,000 RPM fan that sounds like a little jet. And I was just like, what is that sound? I'm looking through, all my fans are running as slow as they can. And then it just, I look at a clock speed or a fan's rotation speed of that one little fan, and it's turning around at 7K. And I was like, okay, that's got to stop.
So it's got that really high pitch.
Oh, it was crazy.
Sounds like the vacuum cleaner from hell.
I mean, I wear headphones for the most part when I'm computing, so it's not such a big deal. But still, it's not a system I'd like to just leave running daily. But yeah, I'm hoping for the Battlefield 2 patch. That's what I want to get back to this weekend. I got a couple extra days off, so. And I got another bachelor party coming up this Friday. Got to go back to Vegas, baby. So I'm preparing my body and mind for that. Actually, we're going to Lake Mead.
Wait a minute. Let's take a step back. How is playing Battlefield 2 preparing your body and mind for Vegas? Is it the whole simulated combat environment?
Game playing in general calms me down. Makes me relax. So hopefully I won't jump in Vegas. I'll antsy.
Yeah, well, you know, you're going to be antsy about 3 seconds after you get into Vegas. Or do you no longer get excited in Vegas, Robert? Avoid the gaming floor? Stay away from the alcohol and other distractions.
Oh, I try. It's basically as soon as you land there. Well, you walk out into the terminal where all the slot machines are. But the last time I was in Vegas, it was really cool. It was the first time in like about 5 or 6 years that I was there where I didn't have to work.
Right.
So it was like I was there purely on a like a pleasure event, and I had a, actually a pretty good time. Did some stuff outside of the strip too, which was nice.
Yeah, that's key.
Last time I was there, we found a 1 mile long kart racing track.
Where?
That was just awesome. It was like 15 minutes right outside of Vegas, and we went and did a couple of 4 or 8 lap sessions. Mm-hmm. And that was just exhausting. I mean, you're just going through these corners at crazy G-forces, and
nice.
They had three classes of cars all the way up to the full 120 mile an hour shifters if you're that good, but I didn't want to die that day, so I backed off of that one, but we had a blast doing that. And then what was the other thing we did? It was a country club that was a skeet shooting, like a trap shoot place.
Really?
And they had 20 holes, quote unquote, 20 traps set up. You drive around in a golf cart for like a mile long course. You stop at each one of the stations, and it's a custom-done, automated skeet shooting session. They supply you with the guns and the ear protection, and there's a shell manufacturing facility right there, ammunition manufacturing place. So just had cases of ammo, and we were out in the middle. It's on the way to Boulder, out in Vegas. That one was about 25 minutes outside of town, but it was beautiful.
You've got
to find. You're up in the hills, and shotguns, and great courses to go shoot trap in, and we had a blast. It was just highly recommended.
You're going to have to get the URL and send that out for the
go-kart
and the... It's like one of the things they always do at DEF CON is there's the shooting range in Vegas where you can basically rent a submachine gun.
Shooting trap is great. I mean, it's fun blowing away those clay pigeons. It's fun. And plus, you're in a beautiful environment, too. So and it's really mellow.
It's hard to explain
guns
about the
ear protection thing. I've worked enough in Vegas to where the strip, you know, is not like a vacation spot that first comes to mind when I think of places to go, you know. Mm-hmm. That's one thing.
Head out to Red Rocks. There's a lot of great climbing out there and some good hiking and stuff. Yeah, it's great.
That's nice.
Hey guys, I got a tech story. You guys want to talk about tech?
Sure.
No. It's the 4th of July. Yeah, of course.
Engadget has some interesting pictures of the next, or actually the first iTunes phone from Motorola, which is pretty interesting.
So are they actual pics? I mean, because people have been floating around with pics on that for a while. Are they?
Yeah, these are actual pics of it working. They actually show a screenshot of iTunes 4.9 that supports the phone. And it shows like a little phone icon and that it's actually connected. But I guess originally when I heard about the phone, I thought that, you know, you'd be able to connect to the iTunes Music Store and actually download via the phone. But actually, it's only with syncing with iTunes that it supports.
So basically, your phone basically is yet another iPod.
Well, that's probably version 2 then.
And the phone doesn't have a camera on it. I don't know. I'm not sold on this one. It's just like any other phone that can play MP3s. Like, who cares at that point, right?
But it's got the
iTunes
mobile
software. So it's a secure USB syncing phone that's compatible with iTunes.
Exactly.
And, okay. So hopefully, you know, it'd be nice if you could actually browse the iTunes store for free and pull stuff in right onto the phone.
That would be cool. That'd be cool.
Like, you know, 5 gigs of storage on your phone. I'm just looking for a way to not have to carry a separate iPod player and a cell phone and, you know, the other basics that I carry around with me daily.
You should talk to Kevin. Kevin owns, like, buys every new multifunction phone on the market.
I do indeed. I love cool phones. My phone actually right now, it's a Samsung from Verizon, and it has a 1.2 megapixel digital camera built into it.
Oh, you got the 8000?
I don't even know what model it is, man. I switch models so often. It's the, it's the SEH-A890.
Hmm.
Yeah, from Samsung. I like it. It's nice.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of the LG is the next step up for mine.
Man, I just want a big OLED screen, an MP3 player.
Yeah.
You know, camera, whatever. You know, Bluetooth support. A VoIP ready.
I don't know if I buy into the whole view, like the VoIP ready cell phone thing. It's an interesting idea, but it's... I don't know.
One more avenue to hack the damn thing.
I don't know. I've had like, it's funny you mentioned OLED for the screen. So I've had 3 people ask me this week. So when am I going to be able to use my cell phone screen outdoors? And I'm like, when they have OLED screens?
Yeah. Or very, very bright backlights.
The problem is a really bright backlight kills off your battery life.
Oh, yeah. Those transflective screens, you don't see those much in use anymore. Or am I wrong?
Not on cell phones, I don't think.
Yeah. What was it? The Fujitsu notebook. It had like a day runner or something like that, where the screen, you could literally use it outdoors in direct sunlight.
Yeah. They tend to have...
Robert,
go ahead.
Tell me what happened to OLED. Like, seriously, we started seeing them appear in, like, digital cameras and whatnot. Now I don't see them anywhere. Like, what's the deal? Why aren't they hitting, like, Best Buy?
Well, the initial problem was blue. That had a very short longevity for the colors. And that has recently been addressed. And now it's just simply scaling up the size. Yeah. And I think, what was it, Samsung last month showed off that 40-inch OLED, which was the largest I'm aware of to date. I've personally have seen, I saw their 20-inch one. I think it was Sharp, actually, that showed it off a couple of years back. And that was pretty fascinating. But until they get the manufacturing cheap enough and they can pump them out with, in sheets big enough to cut up without having to... Oh, actually, it's a printable picture technology, isn't it?
I mean, it's part of the reason you saw OLED for a while, because it's basically, it's the first OLED camera, and there's like 42,000 press releases around that, and it gets picked up everywhere for a while.
And those were small displays, like in the 2-inch, 2.5-inch category.
They are beautiful, though. They look so nice.
Yeah, they do.
It's an emissive where the light is being generated right on the surface, and that, A, they can be very, very thin, and B, they're brilliant looking. But it was also the creating a design that you could do moving imagery on that was convincing.
Right.
For cell phones, it's usually you're not looking at full motion video on your cell phone. I mean, nowadays that's changing a little bit, but you could get away with degraded quality with high speed video on a cell phone more than you could, say, on something somebody's going to put in their living room and watch TV on.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, the idea is like solid. It should be. I mean, the OLEDs, they should be cheaper to manufacture than the LEDs. They should have. They should be able to do flexible. It's going to be lower power consumption.
For small devices, I think you're going to see that be adopted rather quickly. Or even the electroluminescent, the EL technologies. They're getting full color down now to where that's affordable, and it's already bright. And I like displays that are made with that, too. For big displays, it's still too expensive. Any of those technologies are still too expensive. And you have other technologies like SEDs or flat tube technologies. Was it surface electron emitter, I think it is? Or basically, you're creating a tiny array of small picture tubes, each one driven by its own electron emitter, which is, those are both competing for this whole new category of, 40-inch TVs roughly or larger that are an inch thick. Hmm. And in that category, I think you're going to see that in the next couple of years just explode. Because everyone's poised to do several things. I mean, LEDs finally matured to the point where they make good big displays, but they're still expensive at the high end. Plasma's great, but they can't do the resolution to match what they're doing with LED right now in the same size. And it scales larger, sure, but it's prohibitively expensive right now.
Kind of a semi-segue into a viewer question. Jason wants to know, he's going to buy an LCD TV after the holidays. I would like to stick around. A 25-inch would like recommendations. I know you'll have Robert Heron help with this question.
It's all good. The last one I think I saw in that range was from NEC. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, they make some of the best glass out there in terms of displays. Mm-hmm. Very, it has all the features you want, like tuners and stuff built in. It really depends what you are planning to use this for. If it's going to be an actual TV that you're going to have sitting in your bedroom, make sure it works at low light levels. I mean, be sure to check it if you can by turning down the brightness and contrast a little bit and see if you still like the picture quality, because that's one of the problems I find with LEDs. Make sure it at least has a dim viewing mode, because they can put off so much light that sometimes at night in your bedroom, you literally find yourself with the lights turned down squinting at your own TV set, and that could be a bit annoying. That's one thing. The other thing, too, is that... it's not a bad time to be looking in that category, because there are some great values, and they're from a variety of companies. And so
you said you like the NEC. What's the typical price for an NEC around a 25-inch?
I'm going to say probably around $1,100. Probably less than that now. That was probably list price I'm thinking of. So you could probably get it for $700-$800. Probably the price you could find like a 35-inch tube TV or a 34-inch tube TV in HD format. So it's not bad. Make sure it has all the inputs you need to. That's the big kicker for me. It's some of these displays only come with like one set of component inputs. If you want to do like a game console and a DVD player and a satellite box or something that offers HD.
Right.
You see, at that size, though, HD is almost a secondary option. It probably supports HD resolutions, but you're probably not planning on watching a lot of content in HD on a 25-inch TV anyway. So
right.
You want to make sure your standard def content looks good. And it has good scaling modes, too, for standard def. If you want to stretch it out to fill a 16:9 frame, make sure the scaling hardware looks good when it does its thing.
NEC, who else would you recommend?
Oh, you know what? There are only 5 panel manufacturers in the world, major ones anyway. So odds are it's going to be based on somebody's. Who else? Samsung's. I don't know. What does Samsung have in 25-inch? Sharp? If Sharp does something in 25-inch, definitely go with them. Another one of my favorites. I had to get a replacement for that 45-inch LCD that they sent me. Had a little shipping fiasco with that and needed a new one. So I have that coming in. I can't wait to get that done. But who else? Like I said, Samsung is probably my favorite LCD manufacturer. LG. They make some pretty beautiful displays too. NEC, like I said. Name brand companies. But if you're in the store and something does catch your eye, like I said, run through a few of those basic tests. Really consider what content you're going to be looking at it on and try to mimic that while you're standing there looking and comparing.
What if people actually let you like walk in with a DV player so you can start looking at stuff?
Yeah, if you have one of those portable DVD players and a DVD you're familiar with, that's definitely one way to do it. And it's like, look, realize if you plan on flipping channels nowadays, most of the content's still formatted for a 4x3 display. So Right. Either you're going to have pillar bars on the sides or you're going to scale it out. And that's where you really want to take a look at the scaling hardware and actually look at it and to see if the image is acceptable. Because that varies significantly among the different manufacturers. That's really one of the big differences between somebody who has a display custom build, or not custom build, but just thrown together. And it's like, okay, who makes the cheapest scaler out there? Put that in. That's why this TV is so inexpensive. Or another display where you can look at standard definition and it looks pretty damn sharp when it's stretched out and blown up to a bigger display size. But at 26 inches, that's like, again, that's not such a concern.
Right.
And you could probably get away, depending on what your tuner is. There are a lot of PC displays out there, like the Dells are selling Dell sells a 26-inch display reasonably. And you can probably get it refurbished with a warranty and things like that. You could also look at PC displays, too, that just simply offer the inputs you need, a component input, or it probably will have a DVI or a VGA input at the very least.
I mean, DVDs look pretty good when you scale them up on a PC display. What about, how do you get the best, NTSC, regular old television content on a PC display?
So
like
you're depending on the tuner, and right. that's really where it varies. Be honest with you, for over-the-air reception, I'm still using a Voom HD box that received it had a built-in over-the-air HD tuner. And it turns out that tuner that was built into that box, it still works, is one of the best tuners I've ever seen, it pulling in very weak signals.
Really? So, is that for regular TV or for HD?
That was for over-the-air broadcast digital TV, which includes HD, yeah.
You still like that card from ATI, the HD card?
You know, I want to see what else people are doing, other brands, but yeah, that's the one I use the most. With their latest driver updates, I find it pretty stable. And easy to install.
Which
card? Although
I'd
like, they have a 4-part package right now for installing the thing, and it requires the original CD. That gets under my skin a little bit when I, hunting for a disc. But otherwise, it works.
What is?
I'm on eBay right now, and they got the Voom receivers, brand new receiver with HD antenna for $40. Closes in 30 minutes.
That's a sensitive receiver. I'm telling you,
that's not a bad deal.
I use the receiver, that over-the-air receiver that's built into that, to compare it to other TVs that have the tuners built in, and it's surprisingly different. I have a couple of problem channels in San Francisco, and one receiver, the Voom, seems to pull it in crystal clear, and I've had a lot of other receivers choke on a particular channel that I was test with.
The cheap antennas usually still work the best for getting the HDTV?
Whatever you need, yeah. I mean, there's no reason to spend more than you have to, so start with a pair of rabbit ears and then move up from there. And if you have that old school, UHF, VHF antenna from Radio Shack strapped up on the roof still, that's ideal because once you get it pointed in the right direction.
So, but it'd be the rooftop UHF antenna, right?
Yeah. Like the Christmas tree looking thing where lays flat. Yeah, in my jargon for antenna technology. Somebody slap me.
It's a monodipole metaspheric array.
Bite the wire with your teeth and put your hands out. Start there.
Man.
I hope broadcasters really embrace the over-the-air stuff, just because the bandwidth is there.
Right.
It's almost unlimited to what you can do with it, and you don't have to worry about compression and things like that. But
at least,
you know, it's such a small market, relatively speaking, and it's, you know, you have to physically put something in every place. It's not like a satellite that you can beam across to huge swaths of land or cable, where it's just, you know, our signal through our pipes type of thing.
I don't know. I'm still thinking of one of my friends who we went through this kind of like, he just moved, and we moved his DLP, his rear projector, and he was terrified to move it. He was going to hire professional movers just to move the television until he lifted it and realized it wasn't nearly as heavy as he thought it was. But I was laughing with the first week he got it, he goes, "I'm watching soccer." I'm like, "Uh-huh. It looks amazing." I'm like, "Uh-huh. I hate soccer. So why are you watching it?" "Because I can see the blades of grass." And I was just like, oh, no. It's just, I don't know. The over-the-air content can get kind of scary.
I find myself paying more attention to camera work with HD.
Yeah.
Which cameramen really are good at focusing, maintaining a smooth, steady image, things like that, because everything becomes highlighted when you have 6 times the resolution and, you know, shaky cam and things like that really start to make you sick on big, big screens.
Yeah, if somebody's swinging a camera too hard or jerking it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or you realize the person looking through the viewfinder isn't focused on something right. And it just, you're like, oh.
Have you got an HD yet, Pat? Did you get yourself an HD TV?
Nope. We're actually, we just moved into the new house, and sometime in the next month, I think I'm going to buy an HD TV. It's kind of, I mean, I'm kind of wary because, you know, I figure anything I buy now, I'm going to have for a few years. And I'm kind of amazed, like Craigslist.org, the online classifieds in San Francisco. I guess they're all over the country now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing. Like, you remember that I did a search for HDTV on that, and it's amazing the number of like last year's HDTVs that people are selling already.
That was a cool search link you sent me.
That was
was that using just Craigslist engine? You were able to send me a list of like HDTVs in certain categories that were available currently on Craigslist.
Yeah, and basically just did a basic search, and I was amazed at how many of them were being sold used already, which for me is, that's kind of like, you know what I mean, some new gadget comes out, it's like Kevin's cell phones. I can either wait for Kevin to tell me like the cell phone is good or bad, or I can keep an eye on Craigslist or eBay, and if they start showing up used left and right, you know, they're not hanging really well.
True.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of torn. Actually, Robert's been convincing me to get a LCD, like a 30-inch LCD. I was thinking about getting a 35-inch CRT.
I'd love to do a.
I'm not dealing with that weight anymore.
You know,
I have a 30-inch CRT and I just can't take it. I got to get rid of it.
Why did you hate it so much? Poor TV can take it. Moving one more time.
I'm moving to San Francisco and I don't want to lug that thing around, man. It's freaking couple hundred pounds.
Well, I don't carry my television all that often.
Well, I like the nice, like, thin, you know, but I'm going to hold off for a little while.
Well, it's just like, I look at it, if there was more content, I mean, you know, okay, if I get a decent DVD player, it upscales well, or I do a feed off of a media center box with HDTV, you know, HDMI output to the back of the monitor, I can probably get decent upscaling on DVDs, because I watch a lot of DVDs. It's my number one favorite thing to do, and you know, unless everything's, I want the movies to look really good. And I'll be honest with you, it's, you know, I've had a 27-inch television for the last couple of years, and you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to getting something bigger, but you know, I'm still, to me, 35 inches sounds like a huge screen, and you know, to sit in front of a 50-inch television is just a little bit much for me at this point. Although
it's 16:9, it's thinner. You have to make up for it.
And then there's the Kel factor, right? The higher the resolution, the closer to the television you want to sit, which is kind of scary.
I don't believe any of that.
You don't believe the Kel factor? Dude, you can lick your television when you're sitting in front of it. I've seen you.
I don't want to sit that close. I'm sitting back. The sound, audio is more important to me. Audio is as important to me as the video.
I don't know. That's the best part.
I think, honestly, you should spend the same on both.
I'm pretty stoked because the place we're moving into, I've actually got basement access to the living room floor, so I can run cables for the satellite speakers on the surround sound. without having to like put a carpet over them or, you know, run
nice.
42 feet around the outside of the room. So that I'm looking forward to. Decent surround sound, new couch.
That's convenient.
I don't know. I'll keep looking because it's going to be another probably 6 weeks before I buy a television. So I'm hoping somebody comes, you know, with the great new product between now and then.
Get your audio squared away. Make sure you get your 5.1 ready to go.
Yeah. Well, right now we're basically, until we buy the TV, we're going to be watching DVDs on a 20-inch monitor, and it's just not cutting it. They're smooth. It's lovely progressive video, but
that's where the audio kicks in.
God.
No, I hear you.
Fire up Saving Private Ryan and scare the neighbors again.
I want a projector. I'm dying to get a little projector.
You know what?
I have some great walls in my new apartment. And oh, I'm just
do you have a
dying
place
to take advantage of them.
Where are you going to mount the projector? You're going to mount it on... Because that's like... with the projectors of... oh, man. Can you hear me like starting to babble at this point? The projectors are so cheap and they're getting so good in that $1,500 price range.
Yeah.
It's that's just, the way to go.
I'd like, yeah, something kind of portable that I'm not going to worry about too much because I would be moving it around depending on what, you know, we're doing in the room that day. But something very portable like that I could hook up.
Those are so much fun for movie nights, too. Input.
Yeah.
Totally.
You get, that, like,
get a bunch of friends together. It's a great time.
Well, I don't know. The only thing is like, if you don't have a fairly permanent place, like a shelf on your back wall to mount it, you spend all that time playing with the keystoning and getting the... You know what I mean? You can't put it on a coffee table because then every time somebody walks by, they walk in front of it. Or, you know, people True. Move it around and you end up with the, you know, big, giant, wrong-shaped parallelogram screen.
Yeah, but if it's for once in a while, it's just – it's awful fun to be able to whip that thing out and just set it up. Yeah. And just – the problem, again, you run into is audio. And hopefully if you have a home theater set up already going, it's not that hard to run the audio from the video source, you know, yeah. into that. But that's the one thing I run into. Usually I'm stuck – looking for projectors that have a little bit of speaker built into them.
Yeah.
So at least I can...
you know what?
Especially for console gaming. That's what I love it for the most.
There's so many good, like, portable speaker systems. I mean, just get an Altec Lansing or a Eclipse portable system. You know what I mean? Just get a desktop notebook or a desktop speaker system and just take that with you.
Totally. Actually, I'm using, like, an old set of PC speakers for my TV right now just because I like the sound of those better.
Nice.
Than the speakers that are built into it. And I think I need a new TV badly. I am in the HDTV market.
You're even worse than me.
I want a 50-inch plasma, damn it.
Oh, man. See, that's
or an OLED.
It's going to be a few years before the OLED. I don't know. So you're going to sell your television, Kevin, or are you going to hold on?
Yeah, I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to dump it on Craigslist before I move.
Do it.
So what are you going to
get? Really, it's an HDTV, but it's like it's a Samsung, it's a CRT. I mean, I bought it for like a grand, so I'll probably just see if I can get, you know, $600-$700 for it.
That'd be nice.
I don't know. I'm going to hold off for now. I really don't watch that much TV, to be honest. Like, I'm mostly DVDs, and I don't know, occasionally, I just mostly watch stuff on my computer.
Right. I don't know. We've been looking at, we're actually going to get, I haven't had a cable connection or a... or even rabbit ears connected to my television in like 3 years. So we're actually going to get DirecTV, get satellites. We want to watch Deadwood as it comes out.
Nice!
Rejoin the television cultural references thing. I don't know. So what else is going on? When's the next episode of...
System
coming out. Sorry.
Yeah, it's coming out soon. We're busy working on it. The problem is we're doing these big projects that just take a lot of time to build, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like it's cool on one hand because, you know, we put out some pretty unique creations that, you know, you don't see anywhere else, but on the other hand it just takes a long time to actually create these things and build circuits, and you know, it's a little harder than we originally thought. So we're working on some ways to get out more content. I just got done shooting another pod/videocast with Alex Albrecht, the old host with me on the G4 Tech TV version of Screensavers.
Cool.
I miss that cat.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. I love Alex. And so we're doing a little weekly thing where we cover kind of like, it's more like geek culture type news stories. And it's called Dignation. And so you can check that out at diggnation.com. And it's basically we're taking all of, like, the top dig stores from dig.com and kind of repurposing some of them and just talking about them and putting out a little video each week of us just kind of kicking it. And it's a lot of fun. It's cool to get back together with him. He's a lot of fun.
Nice. Yay. You guys have a couple more questions?
Go for it.
Do it.
I'm helping our church get an LCD projector set up, speaking of something we all covet, and we're all looking for using Baylin's, excuse me, looking into using Baylin's for really long audio, video, and VGA signals. Any thoughts, opinions, or feedback on Baylin's?
Are they Baylin's or Blondes?
That's a really good question.
I think it's Blonde.
Blondes?
Blonde. Like a blonde, but without the D.
The capital B, lowercase A-L-U-N-S.
Blondes.
Well, that's actually what we used to have.
It's like brawn, but blonde. I'm guessing. We used those at Tech TV a lot.
They had the entire... Basically, every cubicle at Tech TV was wired up so that they could plug... and they're wired it up with Cat 5, Cat 6, and... So that you could actually have television, so you could watch what was being edited or shot over at the studio in any cubicle or office. And they worked amazingly. They worked extremely well. It's not particularly cheap, but they're pretty good. Sorry about that.
Who's typing?
That was me. I'm sorry.
Are you chatting with somebody else?
No. I just went to Wikipedia real quick.
Yeah, that was actually Troy who sent in that last question. One more question. Wow. Here's the definite classic question. I have an external hard drive, a Sony VAIO PC, and an iMac G5. The external hard drive is USB and FireWire ports. I want to be able to hook it up to both computers at the same time so each can access the drives.
Everybody wants to do that.
That's from Leanne in Ajax, Ontario. That's actually, I've heard that question like 40 times in the last 3 or 4 years.
The easiest way to do that is to get yourself an external hard drive that you can hook into the network. Mm-hmm. Plug it in via, those networkable drives now, and then just set up shares for both computers and you're good to go.
But you won't have the speed.
No, you can throw in a gigabit if they support gigabit, but yeah. I know what you're saying. There's actually a really good one I just saw that I was thinking about buying, because we have a lot of, obviously we have a lot of video that we want to back up and kind of keep off-site. Maxtor's new network drive looks pretty interesting. Have either of you guys had a chance to play with that one yet?
No.
But it's like the One Touch, but it's the network version. Where
you mean the one that's been out for like a year and a half?
Not the One Touch.
I think that was the one I checked out last, because it had FireWire USB built in, it had some cool lighting system built on it, and some good, I think it was Retrospect software for doing backups. And
Retrospect is awesome.
That's another question. Is there any decent free backup software?
That's a good question. I always use Retrospect, because it does nice incremental backups. But that comes bundled with the OneTouch drives.
For backing up your personal data, I'd say buy Retrospect. Buy something that works. Don't screw around.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Just be done with it.
When a lot of it, it's not like Retrospect is... I mean, obviously they have very expensive versions, but a lot of that stuff just comes bundled with these hard drives when you buy them now.
If you don't want to take the time to burn off a folder full of data to, some CDs and scatter them to the wind at safe places, get some software to automate it for you.
Here's the drive right here. It's the Maxtor shared storage family, 200 and 300 gigabyte versions. Just RJ45 connector, boom, you're done.
They have routers, though.
So it's like a little NAS.
USB connections, don't they? Where you can just plug in any USB mass storage device right into it, and boom, becomes network shared.
They're actually supposed to be, the original ones that came out were really good. I don't see where the bigger capacity ones wouldn't be.
What was that? Is it Zymeta? What was that one disc that we reviewed a while back? They made some.
Sounds familiar.
The net disc from
my question is: does it matter then what file system you use on a shared drive between those operating systems, or are you stuck with like FAT32?
Well, the G5 is going to be able to read the G5 is going to be able to read the Windows formats. So either that, or you could set. Separate part? No, because you couldn't access separate partitions. You know what? Kevin's right. Get a, you're both right. Get a, create networked and attached storage, or even like just download NAS Lite or something and create a
something.
Disk. Yeah, a lot of these boxes just have little internal Linux kernels on them, and they run little Samba, little sharing between, so you can access any device or any share that you want, depending on what platform you're on. So they're nice in that way.
I don't know.
For me, I run into file size issues where, multi-gigabyte files. And as long as the file system supports that, it's cool. Otherwise, I take measures to, break the files up a little bit. But I hate having to think about that sometimes.
Check out Ximeta, ximeta.com, their net disk. I know, Pat, you reviewed this one a while ago.
Yeah,
they've changed them quite a bit.
Yeah, it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That bears no resemblance to what I reviewed. Actually, the thing I've been playing around with it at home, basically I'm setting up a smoothwall router, and then I'm setting up a NAS Lite box, which is serverelements.com. And they've done some pretty cool stuff. It's basically a customized Linux distro to create a file server, to create a little network.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's pretty awesome because you get yourself a nice little cheap box. It doesn't have to be anything expensive. Mm-hmm. And then go out and buy yourself whatever size capacity hard drives you want, and you're done.
Yeah, the thing I've tried, like I would say, to avoid is anything that combines storage and a firewall and a mail server and an internal. I've seen a couple of those out, and it's a cool idea. It's like, run everything for your small system off one
I
box.
Hate that.
And all I can think of is like one concentrated point of failure.
Why do they have to bundle everything, man? It's driving me nuts. It's like when you go to install that, like the security suites, when you get them like pre-bundled with a new machine, you have like the McAfee or the Norton security suite, and it's like email blocker, pop-up blocker, firewall, like all this crap, man. I just want like antivirus and that's it. Like, don't give me any of your firewall crap. I don't want any of that other stuff.
So true. You know what? I don't miss that from new systems. I can't tell you the last system I purchased outright, short of a notebook. One of the first things I'll do with a notebook is blow it out completely.
Exactly. I got an IBM ThinkPad, and the first thing I did was blow it away and do a fresh, clean install.
It's a shame more people aren't comfortable doing that. It's not their fault either. It's just something. It shouldn't be that complex. It should be a lot cleaner than it is.
Well, the other thing is, like, as soon as you do that, a lot of people are afraid. Like, I'm not going to get tech support. They're not going to talk to me.
If it generates a phone call, I guarantee the company that built the machine doesn't want that to happen. So
yeah,
they do everything they can to prevent it.
You know what sucks is that they don't bundle Windows installation CDs with these new systems anymore.
Yeah. Or if you want that, it costs you significantly more money.
Yeah, it's funny because the key, like the Windows XP Professional key, is like stickered on the bottom of the laptop, right? So I have a copy of XP Pro here. I'm like thinking, oh, okay, I'll just throw it in, use that key, and I'll be good to go. So I put it in, and it won't let me install. And there is no disk. Obviously, you have to pay extra for that. So I'm like, screw it. I just put a pirated version of XP on this laptop, and if anything ever happens, I have a freaking key.
Does not promote pirating Microsoft products.
No, I'm just saying, man.
Microsoft certainly would not think the TwitCast was promoting such nefarious things.
I'm not pirating, though.
Building your own system.
You just said you had a pirated copy of XP.
No. I own XP. I just couldn't use that particular key. I have a valid license key. It just wouldn't take it, so I had to use one that was done from a nice little generator.
I just wanted to check.
Hey, remember, though, that's another reason to build your own systems, because when you're shopping for parts, you pretty much buy any part that goes into a computer, and you're eligible for an OEM version of the operating system.
Right.
At a substantial discount. I think in the store the other day, I saw XP Pro, disk in hand with a key.
Yeah.
It's like $130-$125.
I'm all about the gray market OEM versions.
Oh, for sure.
You're buying a hard drive, you're buying a DVD burner, you're buying memory, any of that entitles you to an OEM version of software. Legitimately.
We need to tell people to discover computer fairs, man. If there's a computer fair local, like close by, that's the place to go when you're buying parts. Because I don't know, man. If you go to Best Buy, you just get robbed.
Well, there was a ton of crap at those shows too. I mean, there's people selling garbage, but
there's people selling garbage at a premium price at those shows too. But I mean, you can find this. You go to your local big box store, and you'll find the same thing. Where it's like, wow, it's a G5200.
You know
what? It's like,
blew me away about the computer fair though was the CRTs they had available. You could get like a 21-inch CRT that looked pretty darn clean for like $70. And I was just like, wow. And it's like as is, no warranties of any kind, but. Hey, it's plugged in and running right in front of you, and it didn't look damaged.
And
that's where I got my
thing.
DVD burner for like $15.
Love that.
Yeah, just make sure it's plugged in and running so you can see it.
You go the first day of the fair. That's the key, because then if anything breaks, you can take it back. Because otherwise, those guys just disappear.
Well, I mean, some of them are pretty good, where they'll actually, if they have like a printed receipts and business cards, they're either really highly evolved scanners that know about Kinko's, or I should say FedEx Kinko's, or they're, they're legitimate business people. Because some of them you can just smell like that's the funniest looking Microsoft logo I've seen on Windows XP. Is this legitimate? And it's just like, I'm going to the next booth.
That's right.
Some of them, yeah. But yeah,
they have good knives there,
MS
too.
With the S being a dollar sign.
Knives, camping equipment.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you go to a computer fair and there's like swords and stuff with like snakes on them. It's awesome.
Well, it's all
part of looking at all the other stuff. So.
Actually, you know what I really miss? The whole sort of survivalist bent around the year 2000. Like, all the computer, like anywhere you went, you know, before the year 2000. But it's going to kill us all.
That was so crazy. I had so many friends in the IT industry that just were so, they had no fun that night.
Up 24, 36, 96 hours waiting for things to go wrong.
I pointed and laughed, but I felt their pain.
Oh, man. Here's a question on our way out as we end this week's TwitCast. What's the biggest computer failure you've had recently? I'll start out. Mine was shoving a piece of metal to stop the fan and the power supply on my desktop machine because it was too loud, which is why I have a new Antec power supply that I went out and bought, which is quiet, because I short-circuited mine. Did you see the fuse? Actually, the actual fuse inside the power supply exploded. I should take a picture of it and post it online. I've never seen, like, you see a fuse melt usually, but not usually, like, you don't usually see, like, smoky glass and a big giant piece of it missing.
You ever hear an LED explode when too much current's thrown through it?
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a snap.
What happens?
It's like a little bomb going off.
What does it look like? Is it like brown?
It goes kapow. Oh, it almost vaporized. At least I've never found the fragments. I've never tried to catch them either. But just the noise alone, though. It's like the ultimate electronic firecracker.
That sounds a little scary. I mean, do fragments blow out of the thing, or does it
implode? No, I mean, it's resin, so it's just like a little piece of plastic. Hopefully, I can't tell if it's burning or it just explodes into lots of little pieces, or if a chunk actually ends up somewhere. I've never found the parts or any remains.
So don't plug the LED, the 120-volt LED into the 220 or 440-volt
just
socket.
Just follow the directions and don't overdrive those poor things too far anyway.
Oh, so you're saying you did this by turning up your graphics card too high, or what did you
no,
do?
No. An LED itself, like a light.
Right.
It was like in a flashlight, working on an electronic project where it's like, okay, this thing's rated to 1 watt, and we're trying to put, like, 5, 7, 8 watts through it.
Okay,
just
I'm with
nope.
you now. I was trying to figure out how exactly you managed to pump the voltage through the screen.
I'm sorry. That could have totally like figured a display or something like that. LEDs as in the light-emitting diode itself.
250,000 Twit listeners immediately began running in fear from their beloved LCD panels.
My 17-inch flat panel's going to explode! Right.
Hey, man, this is how rumors start.
How about hardware woe is just that. Just that power supply weirdness I went through. That just reminds me to always, you know.
And the Battlefield 2 blue screening.
And that, and I also want to thank my buddy Jeff for just taking the time to literally take every component out, strip it down to like the bare essentials, and put one thing in at a time until we rolled everything out.
Nice.
And then we realized, hey, you got two crappy power supplies in a row.
Oh, man.
Fix that.
Yeah, I
did. I'm going to knock on wood on this one. Because I haven't had anything break in a long time, which is good.
No software crashes?
Oh, I mean, that happens every day, man. Firefox has crapped on me today. I have no idea why. It's like the first time it's ever done that to me.
Really?
Did you have
very few problems
open?
With that browser?
Oh, no. I have no problems with it, but for some reason today, it just freaking died on me.
Hmm. It's a damn Battlefield 2. That's my big bone to pick. That, and you know what? Google Earth, when they launched the app, at least on my notebook and a couple other computers, as soon as I closed out of it and I wasn't looking around at satellite imagery anymore, it seemed my whole system was slowed down for browser use with Firefox.
That's weird.
And until I rebooted my whole system, the snappiness was gone. So,
do you have a plus key for that, by the way?
A what?
Did you get a plus key for that, like the paid version?
Oh, no. I haven't checked it out yet. Yeah. But it is back up, the free version.
Oh, it is back up.
Yeah.
It was down for a while. Okay, cool. I'm going to go on there and I have the free version. But I want to pay for the $20 one just so I can play with the GPS connectivity.
Everybody I know who's either home shopping or, you know, any more people, you can send bookmarks basically for the Google Map or the Google Earth location and the satellite image you're looking at. So I have friends who just like bought a house and they sent the link out so you can see like the satellite image from the roof looking at the new house that they just bought. Or we're all talking about going to Cabo in a couple weeks. We're all looking at, you know, the coastline down there. And it's just such an intuitive, fun interface. And if you have broadband being in big B capital letter, don't even bother if you have a modem. But it's really one of the neatest apps out there right now for just visualization and map browsing, I think.
Yeah, it
Google
is cool.
Maps is really good, too. Wow, that was a conversation killer. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't hear you cut out what you said.
What was that?
I was like, Google Maps is really good, too, and then all of a sudden there was silence. It's like, ugh. I'm sorry.
Their interface is just great.
I'll use something else.
I love what people are doing with the little API, too. They're connecting everything, like weather information, like stockings, like you name it. Like, have you seen this stuff where you can pull up the maps and like pinpoint every little thing? It's great.
That's awesome.
Is there like a page that links those?
Yeah, actually, Wired just came out with an article showing all the Google Map hacks, so check that out. And they have just a bunch of different ones that you can click on where they tie all different types of information to the map data.
Hey, Google Map this. All right, I'll put that in the show notes.
Nice.
Map hacks on crack. Sorry, that's a really good title.
Oh, what else?
I think that about does it, gentlemen.
It's 8 o'clock. We got a late start today.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I had no idea the traffic was going to be that bad.
No worries.
Plus, I had to go to the dump. We got rid of 650 pounds of stuff.
Yay!
That's pretty out of control.
It's always an adventure.
Yeah, the dead washer and dryer went bye-bye. That was very sad. They lasted me like 8 years.
Some Caterpillar driver is going to have a fun time running that over and crushing it down.
I was telling Kevin about that. I'm like hauling, throwing stuff off the back of my truck, and I hear this wham! And I turn around, and there's one of those. Because for people who've never gone to the dump, essentially, the Sanitation and Recycling Center in San Francisco, it's a big giant warehouse, and they tell you to back your vehicle up. And where you back your vehicle up, they have like a row of posts. And on the other side of the post is a couple of really happy people on the biggest like Caterpillar tractors you've ever seen indoor, smashing things flat with a front loader and sweeping by, picking stuff up and throwing them into dumpsters, which get hauled out really rapidly. So
it's really done in a warehouse in San Francisco?
Yeah, well, they used to do it outdoors, and it's really funny because somebody who used to work there used to grab all the strange objects d'art. So there's this hillside behind where it was, and you see like garden gnomes and somebody's plaster of Paris version of Atlas holding the world on his shoulders and like a 9 foot long tiger. And so there's this little army of weird stuff up on this hill. But that's
pretty funny.
Well, the wind never stops blowing in San Francisco, so I guess garbage would end up over half the state. So they moved it all indoors. So you get your vehicle weighed in, and you drive around, and they assign you. They basically look to make sure you're not getting rid of nuclear waste or toxic waste, and they tell you to back up somewhere. And then you're inside this like football field sized warehouse, and you start hucking the stuff off of the back of your truck. And, while the giant earth-moving machinery is smashing things flat and sweeping things by you, they're obviously having a ball. And I should point out that the stuff is recycled at that point, and only the non-recyclable bits are buried. So
pushed out into the bay.
I hope not. I'm going to be really
barges.
Upset. No.
5 miles out. Goodbye.
No, that's not funny.
I hope it's not true, but I suspect it is.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not true.
Okay.
I mean, can you imagine what a nightmare Ocean Beach would be?
Oh. It's bad enough the people you run into just running through the dunes, let alone stuff washing up on shore.
Hey, that's my neighborhood you're talking about.
Yeah, I used to live out there. I miss it. I miss the wackiness.
The world's largest gathering of happy people burning fires on public property.
The beach that hardly anyone uses. Ah, I shouldn't say that.
No, because I tell you what, if you get a sunny day...
This time of year, yeah.
That is a packed beach. You get a lot of happy... Because, nobody gets sun in San Francisco in June or July. Just remember that, Kevin. Like, lay out in the sun as much as you can while you're down in L.A.
I miss the foggy, cloudy weather of San Francisco. I really do.
Oh, East Bay rules, man. It's 10 degrees warmer. I get more sun.
Gentlemen,
I think we're done.
I think we're toast. So this is the part where I get to figure out whether or not, A, I can actually manage to upload this to the FTP server, and B, if we can get the new feed through AOL up and running. So if you hear any like whimpering and crying from the Petaluma area, it's me fighting with
the... Are you just going to dump it raw, or are you going to do an edit on it?
I'm going to see if I can find the...
Yeah, well done.
the naughty bits.
Naughty.
We didn't have to record that one, right? That was, we did this all via Skype.
It, basically, we either have a really fine podcast sitting on the Marantz recorder at the other end of this bench, or I screwed up royally, and we're going to do this all again as soon as I get you guys together.
See you tomorrow.
This flaming mess was brought to you by Patrick Norton. No, hopefully.
Please support us.
We're really sorry.
No, hopefully everything works out.